Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a weekly podcast to keep you up to date on what's new on our cloud platform, Microsoft Azure. Your hosts, Cynthia Crane, Evan Basilik, Sujit DeMello, Kendall Roden, Kel Teeter, and Russell Young discuss a different service or solution on each show, with subject matter experts to explain how to get started, how different services work, and how to make decisions in tricky scenarios. You can find out more about our podcast at azpodcast.com or follow us on Twitter at Azure Podcast.
Okay, welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 313, recorded on January 29th, 2020. And we are here with Bob Ward, a repeat, I think his third time on maybe now. He's going to talk about SQL 2019 and its big data options. It looks like everybody else on the team is out having a good time somewhere else, talking to customers or solving problems or knowing Kale, probably doing something, you know, telling somebody how cool blockchain is. So for better or for worse, between that and the fact that we actually only have one news update this week. So, and actually kind of funny, it wasn't intended to be a SQL Server thing, but it is kind of ironic since we've got Bob. Yeah. But we just announced that we now, when you delete your backups for SQL Server and SAP HANA in Azure, now we have a soft delete for 14 days. Now, no cost. It's, you know, from your perspective, from your consumption perspective, that delete says the data is gone. But if you do need to recover it, you do have 14 days. So that's what's going to give you 14 free days. Yeah, exactly. Which I've been on those cases. I did it yesterday and I need it back. Exactly. It doesn't exist, right? So now
that's the advantage of having a platform as a service.
Absolutely, right? Yeah. And infinite storage capacity in some ways, right?
Yeah, so. Exactly.
So with that, you know, moving on at that point, so like I said, Bob's been on a bunch, but I will, Bob, you know, go ahead and kind of give an intro for the audience of who you are and you know, what you do here at Microsoft.
Yeah, thanks, Evan. Hey, great to talk to you again. It's been a long time. So I am a principal architect in the SQL Server engineering team. Technically, my group is Azure Data SQL Server. There you go. People didn't really know that, but the SQL Server engineering team works under an overall group called Azure Data. So I'm an architect in that team, which means what I do a lot, it's a fancy title. Just means you've been around here a long time, right? spent a fair amount of my time translating all the great work we do to the world, right? Whether that be internal or external customers, that could be at events, that could be blogging, that could be training, that could be writing something up. It could be a book, which I'll make a shameful plug before we're done on the call today. And then the other part of my time is literally architect, you know, doing architecture work for the SQL Server product itself. Giving advice on what are we doing for our future, that kind of type thing. So yeah, it's a pretty cool job. Plus the really neat thing is that I get to do it from Texas still. So I still live in Texas, even though all my team, you know, is mostly in the Seattle area. So I'm up there occasionally. I'm up there next week actually. And then the other parts of my time, you know, at least last year, involved a lot of travel. So you might see me publicly a lot at several different big industry events. So I spent the last over a year working, talking, and speaking, and you know, getting the message out on SQL Server 2019, which, as you know, launched last November. So quite a ride.
Yeah, well, I guess that's the, you know, after what, 25 years of SQL Server?
26 for me.
26 years? 26 yeah. Years of SQL Server. Eventually, it's like everything else. Eventually, SQL Server comes to you, right? Instead of you having to go to the engineering team. But great. That sounds like it definitely is a pretty wild ride. You and I were talking before the show about kind of the evolution, you know, of your role. But I think, you know, today, what you kind of wanted, you and I were chatting about the other day was, man, it's like SQL 2019 is going to big data and containers in a big way, right? Last time we had you on, you were talking about how SQL Server on Linux would run, and it would run in a container as well. And now y'all have taken this an entirely another step forward now.
Well, if you look kind of back in time, the way this all kind of fell out is in SQL 17, which we launched in 17, we introduced SQL on Linux. So naturally, containers kind of came from that world. So out of the gate, we just ran on containers.
Right.
Which is great. So during the time frame leading up to that launch, and I remember being in these early meetings in the summer of 2017, all the way back. I was pulled in these meetings by like none other than Slava Oaks, the father of SQL Server, where we're talking about SQL Server Seattle. That was our code name for SQL 19, by the way. We went back to product names.
Okay.
Nobody had ever picked Seattle in the history of Microsoft, which is weird.
Really?
I couldn't believe it. Yeah. So anyway, Seattle was our project name. We liked the idea of going back to these project names. Mm-hmm. We didn't know the name of the product yet. This is calendar 2017. In that summer, Slava introduced the idea that we're going to go after big data integration. And we already had the container Linux thing working. We hadn't shipped it yet, but we're ready to ship it.
Yep.
And so there was this impetus within the leadership of Azure Data and SQL to do something with big data. Now you got to also flip back and think in SQL 16, we had this feature called Polybase. Polybase was the idea of querying SQL Server with T-SQL queries, and we would redirect those queries into Java map reduced jobs into Hadoop cluster. So now you could start running queries on top of a Hadoop cluster, Hadoop file system, and you could look at them as though they were tables, but the data stayed in Hadoop. So that was the idea of Polybase way back then. So we knew we had that, and we knew we could do Linux containers, and there was this idea like, can we integrate big data worlds together? And so some of our customers thought that Polybase thing was cool, but they're like, we don't even have a Hadoop cluster. We don't even know what that is. But we like the idea of storing files in a file system like Hadoop, distributed file system, without having to do ETL jobs and put them inside a SQL server. So we're like, how do we do this? And so the team started embarking on a project called ARIS, A-R-I-S. That was the name of the project. And the first proof point was, can we actually build together a cluster with a SQL Server engine integrated in with Hadoop and with this concept called Spark? A lot of people on this podcast will know Spark. Like, can we make these worlds together, and can we put Polybase in there so that when we run the Polybase query against SQL, we'll go against our own little Hadoop cluster, not against something that's been out there in the marketplace.
Oh, so you kind of cheat. You sort of cheat. You go back to your own, something you're spinning up directly versus something was already there.
Yes. And not only that, we proved very early on we could take the SQL Server engine as a container, and it could talk directly to HDFS and query files directly. Mm-hmm. Like, we could literally go access a Parquet file, like an MDF file or something like that, right?
Yep.
So we're doing all these proof points. We're like, this has some legs here. This is pretty cool.
Yeah.
So we started kind of getting the proof point from customers, like, would you be interested in this? They're like, yeah, that sounds pretty cool. And then we started saying to ourselves, okay, we want to put this together in a solution where it's not just a bunch of pieces, like it's a single deployed solution. And we knew we could do Linux containers, so naturally our eyes gravitated towards Kubernetes as a platform. We looked at what had been done in Kubernetes. I don't know if you know Brendan Burns, who is a distinguished engineer now at Microsoft.
We've had him on a couple times. Yeah,
one of the founders of Kubernetes. He was working for Microsoft, even then at that time. We talked to him. He's like, oh, yeah, Kubernetes is a natural place to install SQL, install Hadoop, all this stuff, right? So we started going down this proof point of that we could build a Kubernetes cluster with SQL containers, with a deployed set of containers running HDFS for Hadoop, including all the components of that, and a Spark runtime engine. Like, all that would be together. And we're like, this is actually pretty cool stuff. Like, how do we really go further than this? So we just started building on it. And, back in the days, I don't know if we called it Big Data Cluster, but what we landed on was a part of SQL Server. When you buy SQL Server 19, you can get this called a Big Data Cluster. And so, again, the early idea was Polybase, a SQL server that you would connect to, run your T-SQL queries against Polybase. We would direct it inside this, what we call a storage pool or a set of pods in Kubernetes that have your HDFS data. Well, that's all really cool. And in addition, we already knew we had Polybase working for external Hadoop systems, but along comes our team, and we realized and remembered the fact that we acquired a company called Metanautics back in the 2016 timeframe. These guys brought to them the knowledge and the software for how to do ODBC data sources. And
we're back to ODBC days.
Here we go. This is not linked servers now, right? Yes. So we knew these guys had the drivers and all the technology and knowledge to do distributed computing across SQL Server, Oracle, MongoDB, and Teradata. They had built in that already. And we're like, okay, let's take that and put that also in the solution. So now you could run a query in this big data cluster thing in Kubernetes against SQL. You could query your data from our internal Hadoop that we deployed, or you could query data from these other data sources outside the cluster, which could be SQL Server. It could be, by the way, Azure Database, since it's a SQL Server driver. Yep. And you could then join these together. So we're starting to form this idea of a data lake, basically. You can now have SQL Server become a data lake solution using other data sources and Hadoop.
Yeah, I mean, so I think let me step back just a sec, because when you describe what you're doing, in essence, it sounds like to some extent y'all are taking the, you know, capabilities that exist out there that people are using Spark, you know, and yes, these ODBC connections,
and
these
other data sources. Apache Spark, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and you're pulling that in, but the problem has always been getting this stuff up and running and configured. Right. Exactly. It's like it is a non-trivial exercise to go do this. Exactly. And in essence, what y'all are doing within the SQL Server Engine is basically saying, hey, we're going to handle all that heavy lifting in terms of configuring the environment, deploying the pieces and parts. All you have to do is point us to your data source.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because when we're building this, what I just showed you so far, which is the storage pool thing and these data sources, we early on realized that we needed to find a way to deploy on top of Kubernetes all of this stuff very easily. So we built a control plane. We built a series of containers that had a controller in it. You may have seen in Kubernetes architecture the fact that it has its own like API server and control services, right?
Yep.
We built our own set of control services for the big data cluster on top of Kubernetes. So now, and we opened it up with a REST endpoint. That was key. So all of a sudden now, we could build command line tools or even do things like notebooks where we could point to this controller and say, you deploy the cluster. So all we had to do is get the controller deployed in a container, a pod, and then it would do the rest. So that control plane was very, very critical. The controller also did a lot of amazing things. Like we could add in their logic to discover things within the cluster. Where is the Hadoop cluster inside this thing and so forth, right? So this control plane was really critical. So now you've got all of a sudden a Kubernetes cluster, a control plane, and this storage pool and the Polybase capabilities. And early on, we said to ourselves, you know, we need to be able to easily start deploying this. We can do it with KubeADM, you know, using like a standard open source Kubernetes deployment across VMs. Yep. But we turned to Brendan and said, we need to make this work on Azure. So very early on, in the very early days of private previews, even public previews, Azure Kubernetes Service became a great target for us. So we ordered ourselves around that. In fact, when I was demonstrating this in the early days of SQL 19, I always use AKS. It's so easy to deploy Kubernetes in AKS, right?
Yes.
You don't have to worry about your master instance, all that kind of stuff. You just go into the portal or CLI and say, give me one, basically, right? And so we realized we could deploy in that very, very easily. So
And you're pushing the AKS team too, right, as well,
right?
No, in positive directions.
Hard, because we had all these requirements for large data sets and so forth. Yep. But they were already down that path anyways. Yep. You know, they were already looking at customers, looking at AKS deployments, even for things like Hadoop and so forth. We were just going to put a single deployed solution on top of it. So here's a good example. You know, in Kubernetes, you maybe you're used to using a command line tool called kubectl to go manage the cluster. We built a command line tool called asdata, which then can talk to this controller we're talking about, or talk to a Kubernetes cluster itself to do Kubernetes type things. So very early on, you know, AKS was a target for us. We pushed that team. We integrated it very, very well. Now, to kind of complete the story, as we're going along and talking to customers, they're like, you know, ad hoc querying against these data sources is really cool. But what I really need is a data mart. I need the ability to take queries that you have from these sources, whether I join data or not, and store them in a database so that I query that, you know.
Instead of going back to the original then at
that
point.
So here's an example. You know, you have a reporting system that needs reports once a week. Well, I don't need to keep that up to date. Just refresh it weekly. So what we did is we, using this concept of the big data cluster in Kubernetes, we built a set of pods called a data pool. And in this data pool, it's a set of SQL Server containers. And we use column store and sharding inside there automatically. But here's the key. You don't deploy or know anything about that. We just do it for you. You, again, use Polybase to say, yeah, give me a data pool table, and we'll go off behind the scenes and deploy this and take your query and ingest data into that thing. So picture it now, your data lake. You got your Hadoop data, your ability to get to external data sources. You can join those together. You can take the joined results and cache it. It's a caching system, right?
Yep.
Into this data pool, but you don't have to know the intricacies of how we built that. We just use Polybase as an external table concept. So that's pretty cool. Now, along this way, as we're going talking to customers, many of them were interested in machine learning. And you may remember, we've talked maybe some about this, is that SQL Server's integrated machine learning for a while now with R and Python, et cetera. So we said, okay, well, we've got Spark deployed. So now maybe we can give somebody the ability to do Spark machine learning as well, Spark ML or SQL ML. And then we said, okay, if somebody wants to use this big data cluster as an end-to-end machine learning solution to train their model, prep their model, score their model, and expose it, maybe they want to expose the model not as R or Python programs or even SQL at all.
A table.
What about like as a REST endpoint?
Oh, okay,
what
even
about
better.
Application? Yeah. What if your model became an application? But this is all Kubernetes, mind you, right? So how are we going to let somebody deploy an app in this model? We built an interface through that controller again where you can go declaratively tell us, kind of like you declaratively tell things in Kubernetes with YAML. You can declaratively say, hey, here's my model that I built already. Deploy that on a REST endpoint with something called Swagger. Yep. It's a popular known protocol, right? Yep. So now you can then use Big Data Cluster as an end-to-end system to build this thing and expose the app through a Swagger or a REST endpoint, and then people can access your model through the REST endpoint. We now have built an end-to-end machine learning system as one deployed thing that is integrated with SQL Server. Pretty crazy.
Yeah, that like I just had this flashback too, and I can't remember that we used to have REST endpoints in or HTTP endpoints in SQL years and years ago.
This is, and
I think there was a business need for that, but it sounds like what y'all have done now is you've taken that business need, but layered it in a way that is much more usable in kind of today's modern REST API world, in the world of containers. And that used to be just a mess to configure. Now you've got your control plane that's doing it for everybody, right? They just say, I want this app, and SQL Server's control plane deploys all this, handles it, and just does it for you.
Yeah, what would happen is we would talk to that's exactly right. We would talk to customers, and they're like, well, the T-SQL thing's pretty cool, but I'm a Spark person. Where's my Spark endpoint? We're like, yeah. Well, we got that. Yeah. So in fact, endpoints becomes a major factor in this cluster deployment. We give you the T-SQL endpoints if you're a normal SQL person, or we give you the standard endpoints you're used to for submitting Spark jobs, for getting access to HDFS through like web HDFS, mm-hmm. or through even the Swagger endpoints for these app deploy, or even the REST endpoint to do this controller piece, right? So we have a series of endpoints that both appeal to the SQL Server user and to the non-SQL Server user. We can do either one of those things.
Yep.
Now, to complete the solution, we knew we had to do a couple of things. Number one, we needed a security model. So we put Active Directory authentication into this model. So now you don't have to use SQL auth to get access to SQL Server, or you can put Active Directory auth itself into the HDFS part of this. We have to secure the cluster because, again, when we talk to customers about these data lake solutions, we would go to their site and found out that their data lakes were very unsecure.
Yep.
So we could offer to them, look, we're going to use the power of SQL Server and Active Directory now to secure this entire solution for you in one deployed thing. And so that was very appealing to them, right? And then the other piece was high availability. So we have built in high availabilities with things like Zookeeper for the actual HDFS part of it. But what about for SQL Server? So this is pretty cool. So what we put into the Big Data Cluster solution is automatic deployment of availability groups. So you go in and deploy this thing and say, I want this to be HA enabled. We will automatically deploy an availability group in the cluster with a read replica. And anytime you add a database to the cluster, we'll automatically make it available, highly available. So we built that into, again, you don't configure it, we just do it for you, right? So it's all about a single deployed pane of glass, right?
Yep.
So yeah, I mean, look at the power of what I'm talking about, right? Now. Look at all this stuff, right? I mean, I think, Evan, I think there's something like, I forgot how many containers, like 50, 60 containers in this entire Kubernetes solution, but a single deployment. And then we put in management interfaces. We put inside this entire infrastructure all the metrics and logging that you need so that it's exposed with things like Grafana and Kibana, those kind of type open source interfaces, and those visuals are all there as part of the solution as well. So if you need supportability or management or monitoring, we have all that built in as well.
Yeah, because that's kind of the extra piece, right? So great, you went to the folks that are Spark people and said, hey, you got Spark. The first thing they're going to ask you is, where's my Grafana? Right. Where's because that's what they're used to doing to manage those environments. And you can't just they can't walk away from that. Right. That's part of adding in that.
What it really does integrate the power of open source with SQL Server effectively.
Yeah.
That's really what we got.
Yeah.
All supported by Microsoft. That's the key, though. This is not like even though we've got open source software in this solution, if you contact Microsoft, we support the entire thing. Pretty crazy.
I now know where to go the next time I have a customer who's using Grafana and they ask questions. They go, I know some folks in SQL Server that know this well.
Exactly.
I'll be right back.
Exactly. Yeah.
But cool. I think that the thing that one of the things that struck me when you were talking about, I think you said, 50 plus containers to make and deploy this. But this is almost, and maybe you do consider it a one, but this almost feels more PaaS-like. Absolutely. Because it's a solution, and yes, it's on the SQL Server. Yes, it's done, by Microsoft, but it doesn't have to be, right? You could have implemented it a completely different way, still called it SQL Server, and it doesn't matter. There's just these endpoints, and you can access your data using the various protocols. That's all you really have to care about.
Well, there's no question that somebody themselves could have built this, right? I mean,
right.
all the software is there that somebody could have used Kubernetes to deploy these containers in a way that they wanted to. We just deploy it as a solution. Now, we do a couple of things that are interesting, though, that you couldn't do. We deploy the SQL Server engine in a container in many parts of this model that's hidden from you. So I don't know how many SQL servers are running across this thing. But remember, you have something called the master instance. That's your main SQL container. Yep. That's what you interface with. And then behind the scenes, there's a lot of need for an engine or a database to do something. And so if we said, oh, we need a database for this control plane thing, well, no problem. We'll just put a SQL Server container and a database in that part of the Kubernetes cluster. But you don't access it directly. The controller uses it for its own needs, right? The storage pool, another good example. We deploy SQL Server containers to read from HDFS directly, and we've wired in the SQL engine to know how to talk intelligently to those other engines to get your HDFS data versus doing something like Java MapReduce.
Right.
Yeah. So we've deployed the intelligence of SQL Server as well to make this a complete solution.
And it almost – I mean, it sort of feels like because you can run SQL in a container – what typically would be another table or another database within your instance, you're just spin up a container and dump a kind of an isolated SQL instance in there, which gives some separation and gives some stability benefits. The challenge that people always have when they want to do that kind of in the on-premises world just became very, very difficult to manage.
But
you're taking that away, you really get all that benefit without the downsides.
Well, containers give us all the things that you would think containers would, right? It gives you consistency, easy to deploy, easy to scale. I mean, when we want these pools I've talked about, like the storage pool and the data pool, we even have something called a compute pool, by the way, which allows us to use poly-based scale-out to do distributed computing. When we think we need to scale that, we just say, oh, no problem. We tell Kubernetes, give us 5 of those or 6 of those or whatever. And we do a lot of work of using the power of Kubernetes, things like stateful sets we use. Mm. Daemon sets, those kind of type things. We use Kubernetes objects to build the entire solution itself. So we're well integrated with that solution, which means anywhere you can run Kubernetes, you can run this solution.
That's what I was going to ask next. Yeah. So like, is this Azure Stack? Can I do this in Amazon? Can I do this?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Anywhere you can run Kubernetes, we can make this work. And again, like I said, Azure Kubernetes Service is a perfect target for this. But effectively, Azure Stack, which supports the Kubernetes derivation on it, we can run on there as well. Or in your own personal Kubernetes solution. I had a customer that said, look, I really want to do this, but I don't want to use Azure Kubernetes. I literally want to use Azure VMs myself, deploy my own cluster. And can we do that? I'm like, yeah, sure. We support that. So,
wow. That takes that whole deployment and where do I deploy it to, you can really kind of follow somebody wherever they want to be, right? If they, like, we have lots of customers that are using Azure Stack for various reasons,
right?
But a lot of times when we develop solutions like this, just, you know, maybe 2, 3, 4 years ago, it was like, well, sorry, you're not in Azure. You can't run it because there's some dependency, some piece. But the Kubernetes has kind of changed that whole mindset. And as we've kind of gone all in with Kubernetes that and lit it up on our different platforms on premises, you know, which is basically in a VM or on-prem, you know, with Stack or with full on Azure, you can run it wherever you want, right? We kind of come to you.
There's no question we're taking a bet on Kubernetes. We think it's a great platform to run a scalable application like SQL Server and all this data in this data lake. A couple of things you should kind of, your readers or your listeners will probably want to know is, number one, we added one last thing to this model, and that's something called HDFS tiering, because some customers said, look, I already have an Amazon S3 or an Azure data lake HDFS system with my data. So we kind of effectively allow you to mount that into our system so that when you access our storage pool, we redirect you to the HDFS that you already have. So we've got several different models we support on that. The second thing you should know is the fact that this really came up a lot with customers. Like, well, this sounds really amazing. How do I buy this thing? And we're like, you already have it if you have SQL Server. So we integrated the licensing of SQL Server with one of these things. So for example, you're a software assurance customer, you've got Enterprise Edition. For included in your license is the ability to deploy one of these things and not have to spend a lot of money. You may even have enough from the power we give you just from the licensing model to not spend any extra money and just deploy one of these things. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I mean, because so really in that point, if you have that SQL Server license, you pointed at KS, you pointed at wherever your Kubernetes is, mm-hmm. SQL Server license is taking care of that. You may pay for the consumption of those VMs if they happen to be VMs,
correct.
You're not having to pay extra for this solution if you already own SQL Server Enterprise.
Yeah, there are some models where if you really need to get big, you got to scale to a ton of pools and a lot of data. You may have to pay a little extra in your model, but we actually made that very competitive price-wise. Mm. But we didn't want somebody to say like, oh, I've already got a SQL Server license. How many more SQL cores do I have to pay for to get this thing? It's like, no. The SQL Master instance is the SQL Server you know and love. Just buy the cores for that, and you get the rest of this stuff. So that's a pretty, pretty competitive landscape. And the last point I'd make is that there was some news we made at last year's Ignite on a service at Microsoft called Azure Arc. Yep. And you probably heard about that, right? And that's worth another podcast for somebody else to come on and talk to you about Azure Arc. But one of the things we did is that we integrated SQL Server in the early previews of this with that solution. And if you look at it very closely, you're going to see some of the elements I've talked about, like a control plane and so forth. Yep. So we can envision big data clusters as in the future perhaps becoming a solution that runs on Azure Arc, which of course relies on Kubernetes. So big data clusters gave us a lot of learning ourselves on how to build a solution in Kubernetes that feels, again, like you just said, like a PaaS type service, and we think that Azure Arc is kind of the next evolution of that.
Yeah, this is amazing. I mean, y'all have really this type of solution, you know, and again, we were joking about this earlier. You've got 26 years, I've got 14 and change, long time, right? And our culture here was very different a long time ago. Never would have seen us. Kind of, this is truly a marriage of the open source pieces where they do it really well. We adopt the pieces where we do, we kind of have our own, IP that is specifically suited for something or well suited for something, but merge those together in the best of both worlds. And now you get this solution that covers a wide range of business scenarios.
Yeah, think about it. In a single solution with your SQL license, I'm giving you SQL Server, Hadoop, Spark, machine learning, ODBC data sources to Oracle, Teradata, Mongo, Cloud, a control plane. You know what I'm saying? I'm giving you all of this. And I was on an interview at an event one time, one of those big things with a stage and so forth. And the person looked over and says, like, well, this is pretty amazing. I said, no, this is radical. What we've done with what we used to know as your just lovely SQL engine is we've created a radical solution centered around SQL Server that no one's ever really seen before. And we think it's game changing, quite frankly.
You almost could have called this something else.
Yes.
Right. And it still would have been a standalone product, right? It just happens to run on top of SQL Server. And then, got to get a separate license, all that kind of stuff. But by rolling it into SQL, right, you're leveraging that brand, but also the people's familiarity with it. But oh, by the way, SQL's not cheap to buy if you buy some of the big ones.
But the key is that the SQL Server engine, that the master instance, for example, mm-hmm. that's what you interface with, it comes with everything SQL 19 has. So all that great stuff, all the great innovation we've done, the engine with accelerated database recovery and intelligent performance. So you're getting the best of both worlds. You're getting the best of what we deliver SQL Server and then all these other things into a solution itself. So we've had a lot of interest from this. I think you're going to see in this calendar year 2020 a lot more. I just saw today, we just published today in a blog some performance numbers so people can see how well the thing perform for analytic workloads. You're going to see our partners, especially our OEM partners out there that are really embracing this a lot to see how well can you run this in their architectures. And of course, Kubernetes being just a great platform, you're just seeing more people that talk about Kubernetes are talking about this. In fact, people have asked me, where's a proof point how well SQL can run in Kubernetes? And I'm pointing to this. I'm like, well, here you go. Here's the proof point of how SQL runs in a Kubernetes architecture.
I got to say, Bob, this is great. Thank you very much for kind of laying this out. This actually kind of hurts my brain a little bit to think about the scope kind of what y'all have done. Yes. But I got to say, you've set a really high bar. If we have you back in, another 9 months to a year, you got to get something more, even more expansive than this.
Something more radical to talk about.
Yeah, you're really setting a high bar.
If the listeners want more information, by the way, we have free training on this stuff, including SQL, including big data clusters. Just go to aka.ms/SQL workshops or just look for SQL workshops in your search engine and you'll find a GitHub-based learning approach built by the engineering team for all this stuff.
Yeah, that's great. We'll definitely include that and then in the show notes. And then anything else you want to leave our listeners with before we go?
Well, I did write this book, and it includes a detailed discussion of this big data cluster architecture, but I did write a book called SQL Server 2019 Revealed by Apress. You can find it on Amazon or Apress, and in it, I cover a complete book about the entire product of SQL 19 from beginning to end. I think you'll enjoy it because you know me, Evan, I've got all these little backstories from the engineering team, how we built it, what's the history of it. I interviewed a lot of people on how they built certain features, where did it come from, but it literally covers the entire end-to-end process of what's in SQL 19. It It includes some deep chapters on containers and Kubernetes, and then also in this big data cluster solution. So take a look at that book. I've had some good feedback from it, and it certainly was a great joy to write the book and see it come out.
Yeah, no, I I've known you for a long time and attended a lot of your, you know, sessions and triages over the years, as well, just kind of you teaching me stuff. And so I'm sure that that is a good read for everybody. And I'm sure like the history of that stuff has got to be fascinating. So yeah, I would, without even having seen it, I'm putting it on my list of things to go read. And I definitely recommend other people check it out. So well, great. Thank you. Thank you very much, Bob. I appreciate you coming on as always. Again, next time you come on, we expect something more radical.
Thanks, Evan. Great. Thanks for having me today. Yeah, thanks. Great.
Thanks.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any thoughts, questions, or just want to connect, find us on Twitter at Azure Podcast. Background music has been taken from ccmixer.org under the Creative Commons license. We hope you'll tune in again soon to keep learning with us.